The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Joined by Hannah Daly, Professor of Sustainable Energy at University College Cork, on the day that the Environmental Protection Agency has said that Ireland is to fall well short of both its national and EU emissions reductions targets, even under a best case scenario. What's going to happen, Hannah, and does it matter?
Good evening, Matt. Well, first of all, it certainly matters. I mean, this is the day when the Cabinet has just seen a note on climate tipping points, where we see that Ireland and lots of other parts of the world are extremely vulnerable to our climate, which is really overheated. So Ireland, as part of the global community, has to do its part to cut emissions very quickly. And this EPA report that was launched today says that under current policies, under current policy ambition and speed and implementation, we're not yet anywhere close to being where we need to be in terms of our national legally binding carbon budgets and our EU targets as well, which are also legally binding.
So, Hannah, we're due to have a 51% reduction in emissions by 2030 when compared to 2018, if all goes to plan. Instead of getting to 51%, what are we going to get to?
Well, according to the EPA's report and their modelling under the current Climate Action Plan targets, we're going to cut emissions by 29% instead of 51%.
Isn't that what was projected last year as well?
Exactly. So we're not getting any closer to meeting the target, but we're getting much closer to 2030. So the time to actually close that gap is really shrinking. As I said, these are projections based on current policy. They're not forecasts. So policy can respond and should be responding by going faster, by implementing new solutions. As you said, the EPA's projections year on year are not improving. But policy is not responding to these signals. The response should be an acceleration in implementation, in new policies, and a big scale up. This should be a big red flag to the system that we need to do things much faster and to take climate much more seriously. But that's not what's happening. And it's clear as well that overshooting our carbon budgets to this extent is going to bring huge costs. And this is not just kind of financial penalties. I don't think that's a very kind of nice motivation for cutting emissions, even though it's the right thing to do. But even if you look at the compliance costs from the EU as a result of missing our EU targets, we're looking at somewhere between 3 and 8 billion euros in fines or compliance costs. Now, that number is very uncertain. And it would also, we can't just wipe the slate clean as well if we overshoot our carbon budgets. We'll actually have to find savings somewhere else, because any kind of overshoot of carbon budgets is carried forward. So beyond 2030, the range of options that we'll need to look to will be costly and very uncertain types of new technologies. We're also missing out on the great opportunities that we can have as a result of cutting greenhouse gas emissions, because Ireland is still hugely reliant on fossil fuels. And as you know, we import almost all of our fossil fuels. That makes us very vulnerable. It makes our air polluted. Our houses are cold. Our streets are clogged with traffic. So the faster that we can bring in clean energy technologies, renewables, electric vehicles, clean up our home heating and build public transport and build our towns and cities around sustainable transport, the better it will be for our health, for our pockets, for our economy and so on as well.
Okay, Hannah, there's quite a few people texting and making a valid point in that, what is our population now by comparison with 2018? Can this failure to reduce emissions be blamed on the fact that we've had a dramatic increase in the population of the state and the people at work as well?
I mean, there's of course, population drives some of our emissions, but not all of the emissions. So the around 60% of our emissions come from burning fossil fuels, and a large proportion of that comes from transport. Aside from agriculture, transport is our largest.
Yeah, but sorry, Hannah, if you have more people needing to commute to work, if you
precisely
have more people burning or using fuel to heat themselves and more factories running, it might mean that the things that we agreed to doing to reduce emissions in 2018 are being done. But the problem is that there are more people there, and ergo then there is actually more energy being used and more transport being required.
I'd say that one of the factors that is as important as the number of people is where we live, and the fact that we have a housing crisis and people in many cases are forced to live quite far away from where they work means that public transport isn't viable and they have to drive longer and longer distances. And that's a real challenge that has to be overcome as part of development planning, installing public transport and so on. But I would say, for example, when I look at the numbers, the carbon budget numbers in transport, I see very, very little carbon budget left for new fossil fuel personal vehicles. Now, many will say that electric vehicles are very costly, but the typical new car that's bought is also very costly, and many electric vehicles are now within that price range, and they also offer very significant cost savings when they can be charged at home overnight. So, you know, while the kind of climate action plan is targeting 1 million electric vehicles by 2030, which is all well and good, we're actually selling more and more fossil fuel vehicles at the same time, and those cars are getting heavier, the weight of new cars has grown by about 300 kilograms since 2010. I'll also say that it's been very, very difficult to get some transport schemes in place, whether that's for the metro, whether that's bus connects, or even down to the kind of single footpath. I'll take the example of my children's school. I mean, the parents and school have been trying to advocate for a safe footpath for the kids to be able to walk to the town, you know, when they have to go to mass or when they sing Christmas carols in the town. They have to share a road with heavy goods vehicles, fast moving cars, and the council won't even give them a footpath. It seems too hard. And I just wonder why can't we put more urgency into things like this, from the lowly footpath for kids to get around safely, right up to metros and quality bus corridors.
Okay. Some listeners also want to know, if you say Ireland is failing and that we're only going to hit 29% reduction in emissions as against 51%, how are other European countries doing? Indeed, how are countries like the United States and China doing?
In fact, Ireland is the second highest emitter in Europe on a per capita basis. So Ireland has to cut emissions kind of further because we're starting from a very, very emissions intensive base. We've failed to cut emissions significantly, like other European countries have done. So we're actually kind of far behind a lot of most other European countries in that regard. And that's because of our very livestock intensive agriculture sector, but we're also some of the most fossil fuel dependent countries in Europe as well. And now, of course, we cannot solve climate change without all the big countries also getting on board, including the US and China. And both of those have, of course, huge historical and current responsibility for climate change. But the very good news globally is that I've seen projections today to suggest that China's CO2 emissions might actually have peaked in 2023. You wouldn't believe how quickly they are going on renewables and on electric vehicles. And that is as much of an energy security and air pollution measure as it is for the climate.
Okay, obviously there's an awful lot of things that are there as targets for people to do if the country is to achieve its emissions targets. But is it likely that people will agree to doing all of the things that have been asked of them? Could it be that governments will be slow to ask them for fear of receiving an electoral backlash?
And I think this is one of the key kind of constraints in these few months, because some of the most, I suppose, contentious reasons why we're not on track to meeting our carbon budgets is because the measures necessary are really politically difficult. For example, the EPA report today says that in the Climate Action Plan, spells out what's called diversification of farming activities, which effectively means diversifying away from the very high carbon intensive dairy and beef industries that we currently specialize in, towards things like crops, forestry, organics, things that produce far less emissions. But that inherently means cutting livestock numbers. And we've seen Taoiseach Harris say that, you know, that's just not on the table. For example, a dairy exit scheme, which would allow farmers to choose to diversify or support farmers to diversify away from dairy, it's just not being supported. And the fact that this is such a politically difficult question. There are also in other sectors, agriculture.
Oh, sorry, before you go to other sectors, I mean, is it fair to expect our farmers to cut back if they are actually, yes, they may be producing an awful lot of the carbon emissions, but aren't they also feeding people? As the global population increases, don't we need the food that is produced in Ireland, particularly that if our farmers cut back, we could see farmers in other parts of the world don't do so, and that they are actually emitting more than environmentally conscious Irish farmers might be doing?
Yeah, this is a very kind of well-worn argument. Of course, the world needs food, but beef and lamb especially are the most carbon-intensive types of food that you can produce. Similarly, dairy is it's less carbon-intensive than beef and lamb, but it is still relative to crops, actually much more produces a lot more CO2 emissions than crops like beans or wheat and so on.
Oh, but people's diets need the fibre.
This is not about asking farmers to do less. It is about allowing them the opportunity to diversify their activities, and a more diverse food system is also far more resilient and stable, because we're entering a time of of climate shocks. You know, we saw the wettest winter on record. We had cattle indoors far beyond what they normally would be because the ground was sodden, and that was because our climate is changing, and we're about to enter an era of more destabilized climate. And the more we diversify the kind of food that we produce, maybe make more food that we eat in Ireland, so we import loads of our own food here because we export so much of beef and dairy. So there's many reasons other than, I suppose, reducing our emissions, many reasons why we might want to diversify our very kind of livestock heavy agriculture system at the moment. That includes more trees. We need more trees. We need more space for nature. We need to kind of re-wet our peatlands and so on.
Okay, we have to leave it there. Hannah Daly, Professor of Sustainable Energy at University College Cork. Thank you.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.